The Brandon McMillan Podcast is brought to you by Lucy Pet Food. Why feed Lucy Pet Food? Because they specialize in gut health, which is vital to the overall health of your dog. I feed it to all my dogs because it works. Go check them out today at lucypetfood.com. All right, welcome to the Brandon McMillan Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for joining. A little later, we'll be talking to disabled U.S. Army combat veteran and Purple Heart recipient, Specialist Tyler Jeffries. This gentleman was hit by an IED in Afghanistan, taking off both of his legs. Incredible human being. I trained not one, but two service dogs for him. So he'll be joining us a little bit later in the show. We'll be talking extensively about his journey. And of course, we'll be talking about both of his service dogs. But first, let's get to some Q&A from the audience. All right, we're talking with Heather from Lincoln, Nebraska, with your dog Gracie, you said?
Yes, now, Miss Gracie.
Now, tell me a little bit about Gracie. What's going on with her?
Well, I adopted her about 6 months ago with her companion, Nitro. Gracie and Nitro were from a somewhat abusive past, and Gracie actually jumped off an overpass onto an interstate, broke, a lot of her bones and such. And so I'm assuming that's where she lost her eye. She has no eyeballs. Her eyes are closed or are sewn shut. She's very independent. She, figures her way out, mainly through smell, goes outside, handles stairs. But I feel like, would she be better in confined spaces when I go to work, I guess, is my question. She kind of tears at the door, when I get home, she's fine. But I didn't know if a crate would be better for her. She loves, just being held and held close. And so I put her, when there's people around, I put her in a front pack so that it's not overwhelming. But when I'm gone, I don't know what is better, if she has, free reign of the house, or if she would actually do better in a crate. I guess I'm just hoping I'm doing everything right.
It sounds like you are. There's pretty rock solid evidence if your dog is under serious stress or having a major anxiety attack when you leave, because you said there's little scratches at the door, but little scratches I'm not worried about. When the scratches are so deep, it looks like, someone has been kidnapped and trying to claw out of a trunk of a car. That's the ones I'm worried about.
Right. And she, I guess I should say, she actually has scratched through bamboo floor mats and torn those.
Is this recently or?
Yeah, probably within the past month.
Okay. So it sounds like she does have a little bit of separation anxiety. So with separation anxiety, especially, it sounds like she just wants to be close to mommy, which most dogs do. Some dogs just, there's different areas of separation anxiety that sometimes they just want to be outside, or sometimes they want to be close to the family member. There's a few things I like to do. I do what's called the layered system. I do this on my show all the time. And what I do is I don't stop at one technique or one tool. Separation anxiety, it's almost impossible to eliminate it completely, and let the dog has to do that themselves. But it's really tough to eliminate it completely when you're trying to use a tool to do it yourself. I really believe, even though I think you've gotten through most of it, I think as the months go on, you'll see even a little more improvement as time goes on, because time is your best friend with training.
Okay.
That's the good and bad thing about time. Time,
yeah.
Unfortunately, it moves at the speed of life. So sometimes time just takes forever. It's like growing a plant, and what that plant will eventually look like, but we're starting from a little seedling. It's only 6 inches tall, and it could be 20 foot tall in a matter of 3 years. So that's the good and bad thing about time. The same thing works with dog training.
Right.
It takes time to get your dogs over these issues. Separation anxiety is not like obedience. It's not like a sit or stay where I know after 1 hour your dog will be in a down position every time I say it. Uh-huh. Separation anxiety is much different. It is a psychological issue, whether it's the dog was born with it or whether it's something from the past, but your dog is dealing with it. And if we can't train it out of their system, we have to maintain it. We have to do a maintenance process here. This is my recommendation to you. Get a compression shirt.
Okay.
Go online, check out these kind of music boxes for dogs. They play a different tones and sounds. their supplements, you know, for anxiety. A lot of people, believe it or not, have had a lot of success with CBD.
Yep.
That's something to look into. But again, okay, don't just do one at a time. I incorporate multiple because I find much more success when I stack on three or four at a time than just stopping at one. Because the everyday thinking of everybody else out there is, oh, okay, I'll just get the compression shirt. It didn't work. That's it. Done. No. Sometimes when you layer them, when you do like three or four at a time, now you see a big difference.
Awesome.
And don't forget the dirty laundry trick. Just a shirt you wore yesterday. Sometimes the smell, because remember, I mean, she can't see, so her nose is what she's relying on for her entire life now. Sometimes that alone just fixes it.
Okay. You know?
Sometimes sound fixes it. I mean, just keeping the radio on or the TV.
Yeah, I keep the TV on. It just turns off after like 4 hours and it goes silent. So I sometimes do, you know, music, but then when I turn the music on, she is thinking, okay, now she's going to leave. So that music box might be really great.
Yeah, give it like I said, it's all worth a try. You know,
absolutely.
Your situation is a little more unique because she's blind and she's a little older. Uh-huh. But again, I mean, look, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference whether, you know, she's blind, she's older. It just adds that little change, that little obstacle in there, you know. So I would
yes.
And by the way, I mean, considering the fact that she you're saying she doesn't run into things, because I would recommend there's a tool out there to help protect her head just in case she was. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
I have seen those and I didn't know, because she's so independent, if that would be more of a detriment to her or if it would actually make her feel safer.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, you only have to consider that if she's running into things and she's hurting herself. I've had a few blind dogs that I've worked with in the past. They run into walls and it's kind of dangerous. They'll just run full speed into a wall. And there's one company out there called the Muffins Halo. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but what it is, it's almost like it's like this kind of bar that fits right in front of the face. And it's almost like a football helmet without the helmet part, but just like the
right,
like a one bar that, and it protects the face basically from smacking into a wall. It's actually really good. I've seen dogs wear them and it, you know, it protects them. It's really great. So it's something to consider in the next few years, you know, if she, when she gets older and if it progresses into something, a little more unsafe for her.
Yeah, that's great advice. Perfect.
But in the meantime, like I said, use that layered system that I was talking about. Get several things at once and give it a try. Don't forget the laundry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I change clothes a couple times a day, so that is easy as pie.
Okay. And by the way, go easy on her. Go easy on her. I've seen some dogs, they'll chew a hole in your shirt. If that's the case, I always tell people put like a shirt underneath the bed or inside the bed. That way they can't get to it. Okay. Because they can still smell it right through the bed.
Awesome. We'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Not a problem.
Love watching you every Saturday and I love what you do. So just thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Does your pet struggle with missing you while you're at work? Have they reached their senior years and need a little help feeling like themselves again? Or are you simply just looking for an awesome daily supplement for your currently healthy dog? Well, Pet Relief is on a mission to change what healthy means for pets. As the number one most trusted pet CBD company out there, they're doing just that. Their line of all-natural, safe, and organic supplements are perfect for pets, no matter what their age or health status is. From CBD hemp oils to bite-sized supplements called Edibites, capsules, topicals, and hemp protein bars, there's a holistic option for every one of your four-legged friends. And the best part is, their website provides a usage calculator where you can get a custom product recommendation based on your pet's specific needs. To give Pet Relief a try, simply use my promo code BRANDON for 20% off your total purchase. To shop now and read more about CBD for your pet, check out Pet Relief's website, www.petrelief.com. That's spelled P-E-T-R-E-L-E-A-F.com. And by the way, one last note, I use their CBD on my dog Lulu. She's a 14 and a half old Chihuahua, and I've literally watched her life do a 180. They have amazing CBD products, so go check them out right now. So years ago, I used to think that all dogs had bad breath, and that's just the way it is. But as time went on, I started learning a little more about it, and I started learning that a dog's bad breath could potentially be a sign of dental disease, which is actually the number one illness in pets, which leads to heart failure, kidney disease, and even shorter lifespans. Well, Teef is a product that you easily add to your dog's or cat's water bowl. It's made with Protekin 42, which is a prebiotic powder that safely targets dental disease where it starts below the gum line. Teef is all natural, human grade, and veterinary approved that is non-toxic and safe. There's no artificial flavors, colors, fillers, or preservatives. It's tasteless and odorless and promotes strong teeth, healthy gums, and fresh breath. Teef is brought to you by Primal Health. And for 20% off and free shipping on the entire cart, and who does not love a deal, enter Brandon on their website at teefhealth.com. Now, make sure you get this right. I'm not saying teeth. I'm saying teef. That's T-E-E-F, as in Frank, health.com. I've actually been using this on my Chihuahua Lulu for a little while now, and it's made her breath substantially better. And if you can make that breath better, then anything is possible. So go check them out right now. It's a great company. All right, joining us now is disabled U.S. Army combat veteran and Purple Heart recipient, Specialist Tyler Jeffries. Tyler was hit by an IED in Afghanistan in, Tyler, what was it, 2011 or 2012?
2012.
And the blast, it took off both of his legs. And I know him very well because I trained not only one service dog for him, but two. Very good guy, very good friend of mine now. Tyler, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey, not a problem, man.
So Tyler, before, I mean, obviously I want to talk about your time in the military, but I want to know you. I want to know, you know, the your route to get there. How old were you when you decided you thought it was your mission to join the military? Were you a little kid, or was it later on, like in high school?
It was right after high school. I was, I think 20 years old. My 21st birthday was in boot camp. So,
and what was the epiphany? What was the moment? What was going on at the time? Because right now, how old are you?
Right now, I'm 30.
So this is around 10 years ago, and that's when the second Iraq War was in full swing, and the second Iraq War and Afghan War, right?
Right.
So what was the moment that that changed everything for you, where you knew you wanted to join?
Well, honestly, one of the main reasons why I joined is, you know, after high school or during high school, I always thought I'd be going to college, you know, hopefully playing baseball on a baseball scholarship. And I got hurt my senior year. I tore my UCL in my elbow, and my pitching career and stuff like that was over. And then, so a couple of years after high school, I just wanted a difference, wanted something to fulfill my life in a sense, to do better. And the military was the best option for me.
So you were an athlete before the military?
Yes.
Would you say you tore your elbow?
I tore my UCL in my elbow, in my left arm, my pitching arm.
That's probably the only thing in my damn body I haven't torn. I've torn everything else. I'll take your word for it, how painful it is.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So you're 20 years old. Why did you choose the Army over the Marines or anything else?
Well, for me, I wanted to be in combat. I knew that was my dream, and my passion was to make a difference, you know, and I wanted to make a difference. And I thought the best way to do that was to be in a combat role. So I knew immediately going into the military that I wanted to be in the Army and I wanted to be in the infantry. And there was no other choice besides that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now for those of you, for the people that are listening that have never been in the Army or never will join the Army, how hard is the training to actually make it into the Army?
I don't want to say it's terribly difficult, you know, but I mean, it had a good amount of challenges. You know, it's definitely not easy.
Well, you're also an athlete, so it's probably a lot easier for you. Yeah.
It made it a lot easier at the time. I know there's some other people that struggle a lot more than I did, but for the most part, it was a good challenge, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I hated it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So now you're in the Army, and what are you now? You're 21.
Right. I just graduated after graduating boot camp and officially in the Army 21 years old.
When did you get officially deployed to Afghanistan?
We got deployed to Afghanistan in April of 2012.
Okay, and so when you were over, when you were on your way over there, was there any concern about, God forbid, dying? Or, I mean, what's going through your mind as you're heading over there? Because, you know, we as citizens, as civilians, we're all just sitting here watching the stories on the news, and you know, we're thinking of the veterans every day, our men and women in combat. What was going through your mind as you're heading over there?
I didn't necessarily think about it too much. I know most of the guys that I was with, we all knew it was a possibility that we were going to get hurt or die or something like that, but we also knew exactly what we signed up for. You know, it was no surprise. So it wasn't a shock to us getting there and then knowing that we're going to die or we could die. We expected to be in combat. We expected to know the risk. And we still performed very well and did our jobs. So it was, like I said, nothing new to us. And
so obviously you have to have a different mentality to walk into a battlefield than the average person, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you definitely have to. I mean, you got to be prepared for the worst, but be still be willing to do your job at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because really, at the end of the day, it's all about you and the person standing next to you. Yeah. So we didn't care about anything else, but the mission, and then bringing everyone back after that mission.
So talk me through the day that it all happened. What was the date? And tell me everything. What was the weather like? Just even the sound in the air. Give me the whole just environment that day.
Well, it was October 6, 2012. We had just woken up at 03:30 in the morning, and we had a patrol. It was still dark, pitch black outside, and we are getting prepared to leave the wire at 06. We were just doing a basic patrol. There was this OP. We needed to go set up an OP that was a couple of clicks away from our base. By OP, I mean it's an observation point. We kept getting contact from a certain location constantly, almost every day. And we decided we finally had enough. So we wanted to go investigate and put a stop to it. It was actually a pretty chilly morning, to be honest, if I remember correctly. I can remember being very cold, very foggy. And we had to leave the wire using night vision. And when we first left, I mean, it took us a couple hours, I would say, to get to where we needed to go, even though it wasn't that far. But moving very slowly. Yeah, as you can imagine, being pitch black, using night vision, and still having to sweep for mines and all kinds of stuff like that. I volunteered to lead the patrol that day with the minesweeper. It wasn't my job that day to do that, and I actually volunteered to do so.
Why did you volunteer? Who was supposed to be doing it, and why didn't they do it?
Well, one of our guys, he was on tower guard the night before. So he got off of tower guard at midnight, and he came into our talk and asked if he could sit out the mission because he had just got off tower guard and he would have gotten, you know, 2-3 hours of sleep and then had to get up and go on a very long patrol. So I told him, no worries, you get some sleep and I'll take your spot. So I did. I took his spot while he slept. And I led the patrol that day with the minesweeper.
And then what happened?
So I was leading the patrol, and we had just set in all of our gun teams. I cleared sections to place our gunners and our other teams in a perimeter around this area, abandoned compound we were searching. And not long after I set everyone in place, I was in the very front. I was clearing this wadi, which is another term for a small creek bed. And I vividly remember taking a couple steps towards this creek bed, and I was just searching the very top of it, looking for any kind of IEDs or imperfections in the ground or anything like that. And as soon as I remember, I took one step, and then I took my next step with my right foot, and right in the very top, the crest, the top of the wadi, and then boom, I wake up on the ground. And it was actually a command-wired IED, so meaning there was someone in a bush somewhere hiding with a button, and they pressed the button and blew me up. So they knew exactly what they wanted to do and what they wanted to accomplish, and they tried.
Now, were you knocked out unconscious during the blast, or did you remain conscious the entire time?
I wasn't knocked out. Initially I was. I woke up about 10 seconds later. I remember laying on my back, and I remember just the cloud of smoke and debris all around me. And everyone's screaming my name, just yelling, "Jeffries, Jeffries." And I can remember laying on my back. I look over my left shoulder, and I see my buddy, one of my friends, Sergeant Cunningham, running towards me and just screaming my name. And I remember very vividly him just saying, "Jeffries," over and over. And I just look over to him, and I say, "What?" Like, as if, like, what do you want? Like, quit saying my name so much. And soon after that is when I realized, oh shit, you know, something's not right.
So you had no idea what happened at that point?
No. I was confused. I was like, why am I laying on the ground?
Yeah. So what did you think happened? I mean, did you think that you just tripped or because I do grappling. And so when you're choked unconscious it happens in tournaments all the time, actually. You wake up and you're actually in a fuzz. You don't know how you got there, even though you've only been unconscious for 3 seconds. So I know what that feeling's like. But what is what's the first thing that went through your mind?
Like I've had spells where I've passed out before from certain things or injuries, stuff like that, and it's very similar to that. I just woke up in a daze, you know, a couple seconds later, and I was very confused of why I was laying on the ground. I had no idea. And like I said, that's when they were yelling at me, and I was almost, you know, like, what the heck do you want? You know, I had no clue. And then it wasn't until Sergeant Cunningham actually got to me and grabbed the top of my body armor and started dragging me away that I looked down at my legs and they weren't there. And if you can imagine the image of looking down and just seeing your bones and bones sticking out of your legs and just skin and meat and muscle just hanging off of them. And then at that moment, all of a sudden, that's when the pain kicked in. And it was excruciating.
And so now they pull you off to the side. What are they trying to keep your head up they don't want you to look at your legs?
Yeah, they were trying to keep my head down the entire time. They would not let me look at my legs anymore, mm-hmm. because at that they didn't want me to go into shock.
Yeah, I've heard this. A lot of times I've heard this before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they see injuries like that, when someone does, especially to yourself, you tend to go in shock after seeing yourself in that situation. Yeah. And I didn't go into shock. And it's probably because they were keeping my head down and not letting me look anymore. But they had to put two tourniquets on each of my legs, because, you know, my legs were obviously blown off. Half of my pants were gone. I had strap metal all over. My left arm actually got caught on fire, and I had to put my arm out myself in the sand. So right after I got blown up, my left arm was caught on fire, and I had to dab my arm out of the flames.
And so now, how long did it take for the medic to get there to rush you off until you got medical care, like a proper hospital?
Well, our own combat medic, he got, and Sergeant Cunningham, this the reason I'm still alive today is because he got to me first before anyone else did. Everyone else was still kind of dazed and confused themselves, being so close to a blast. They had no idea what happened or who was hit. But Sergeant Cunningham, this being his fifth deployment, he had a lot of good practice and knew exactly what he was doing. So as soon as that went off, like, he immediately ran to the front, and he was the first person to get to me and immediately start putting tourniquets on me to stop the bleeding. So I owe a lot of my life mostly to him, you know, and all the guys that were there, but he's the one that got to me first, being so far away. I laid on the ground while they worked on me, and from the time I got blown up to the time I got put on the helicopter to leave, it was 55 minutes.
Jesus.
And I was awake for the entire thing. And the reason I know it's 55 minutes is because I have the video and the timestamps on there of how long it took. So I was awake that entire time, which I can remember talking to my buddies. They were all keeping me calm, and they're like, "You're so lucky you're going to have a beer before we are." And I was like, "Don't worry, guys. I'll have a beer for you when I get back home." And, you know, they were saying whatever they could to keep me calm and to not go into the shock, you know, and it was tough.
So talk me through the first day you woke up in the hospital and you realized that this is your new reality. What was that like?
The first day, honestly, it was just anger. I was so mad at the world, so mad at myself, and just so angry that this is my life now. It's like it all hit me at once. At first, I was a little confused and I didn't know exactly what happened. But when I woke up back in the States, it kind of all hit me at once that, you know, this is my life now. You know, I'm going to be stuck to a chair or barely be able to walk. I won't be able to play sports anymore or go for a run or get outside and play with my daughter or, you know, run the bases or go play catch with a football with family, friends. I was mad, man. I was extremely pissed. And then about a week later after being woke up in the States, I went down to what's called the MATSE. It's our PT area at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. And I can remember this very clearly because they pushed me in there in my wheelchair, and I saw all these guys. There was triple amputees, quadruple amputees, other double amputees, and they were all working out, walking, you know, doing their stuff. And from that moment on, from that very moment, I stopped feeling sorry for myself. So at that moment, right there is when everything changed for me. I still was angry, don't get me wrong, but I had a new purpose of wanting to get better, because I'm not going to complain about my injuries when there's someone worse doing better than I am.
So do you have a dog that their nails grow like weeds, like I do? My dog Lulu, she's a Chihuahua, and anybody who has a Chihuahua, they can attest that their nails literally grow like Edward Scissorhands. And because of this, I've tried a lot of different nail clippers over the years, but the one I like right now that I'm using consistently is called the Zen Clipper Precise. And what it is, it's this really cool clipper that actually features this little laser etched marking for consistent measuring. So what this means is you determine how much nail you want to cut and easily adjust the blade using the thumb wheel. So in other words, if your dog moves around a lot, no matter if they're moving or not, it actually is going to clip the nail exactly where you adjust that wheel. So that's the cool part about it. It clips the tip, not the quick. And trust me, if you ever got the quick of your dog, some of you, I'm sure some of you have, they never want to get their nails clipped again. It's a nightmare. So this thing, it's awesome. It has a sharp stainless steel blade that quietly clips instead of crushing the nail. And I've used those cheapos that actually crushes the nail. And then when I pull those out and my dog sees that, they just run for the hills. Give this one a try. It's worked on my Chihuahua. And if I got her over her fear of clipping nails, then you probably can too. So for 20% off and free shipping on the entire cart, enter the promo code Brandon when you order at petppi.com. That's petppi.com. Go check them out right now.
This is the part of the story where you and I met. I'll just chime in here really quick. And I was called by a good friend of mine that I've known for years. His name is Clay Burwell. He's also an Army veteran. And I don't know exactly how you guys met, but he's the one who called me up and asked me. He says, "Do you know how to train service dogs?" And at the time, I was still training animals for the movies. And so I technically knew how to train service dogs, because service dogs, you're just technically turning those movie tricks into life-altering techniques that can actually help somebody. So I asked him why. He showed me a video of you. I read about you. And he says, "We already have a dog donated. It was a Doberman Pinscher." And he says, "All you have to do is go check it out, see if the dog is adequate." So that put me on a new mission in life. So next thing you know, I'm flying to Pennsylvania. I met this dog. And at the time, he was young. He was about probably, I believe he was like 9 months old at the time. And, you know, perfect age to start training, especially service dogs. So there was two things I remember you needed, because I saw a video and I talked to you a little bit. And you needed two main things. You needed a brace command to help you up and down stairs, off the couch, into your chair. And you also needed things retrieved around the house. So that would be a retrieval command. And easier said than done because most dogs can retrieve. But good luck doing that with a water bottle or a set of keys or your phone. I spent months training this dog, and I remember you flew out to you first flew out to California to meet the dog. The moment that changed everything for me was when you two connected right there. I opened the back of my my SUV, and you went over to him, and you were on your prosthetic legs, and you were still learning how to walk on those legs, I remember. And he just sat there, and you guys had a moment for about 15 minutes. Then I flew to Walter Reed to work with you for a while in Bethesda, Maryland, when you were living there, when you were still getting treatments. And that was the moment that that for me, it changed everything, because I knew at that point I had the key to helping people that, you know, wanted a piece of their freedom back. I gave him to you in 2013, I believe in April, correct?
Yes.
Sum up the years that you had him. What were they like? How did he change your life? How did he give you a new outlook on life, especially what you just went through?
Well, first off, I had Apollo for about 5 years afterwards. When I first got him, it was life changing for the sole reasons it gave me another purpose. You know, like I said, I was still very angry at the world, and I was inside. I felt alone. Yeah, you know, I didn't really have purpose to really go outside or to do much. I just wanted to do my workout routine and, I mean, get better, but I was almost hibernating in a sense and shutting myself off from the world.
I remember specifically. That's when I first met you. You and I would spend a long time on the phone together, and I would try to, you know, I try to talk you through this stuff. And, you know, I mean, who the hell am I? I'm not a veteran myself, and also I'm not the one missing limbs. So you were the one saying, you're not in my situation. You know, who are you to be telling me this? So, and you were right. You know, I mean, I don't know what that's like. I don't know what it's like to be injured on the extent that you are. So I was just trying to give you words of hope, but you needed something else.
Yeah, but one of the things you told me that still sits to me this day and made the biggest difference to me. And I'll never forget what you told me when I was out in California, when it was soon after we took that picture in front of the Hollywood sign. And we were having that talk and going through stuff. And you remember what you told me? I'm sure you do. That little, your famous quote.
One day your life will flash before your eyes. Make sure it's worth watching.
Yep. And yep. I continue to try my best to live by that. To not only be a better person, but to, you know, do better for myself and to treat others better and to make sure my life is worth watching at the end.
Now, last year, you and I have kept in touch all these years. And last year, you called me with some terrible news. You told me that Apollo had a condition and he only had a few months to live. And you were going to get him into surgery to try to extend that time. Tell me about the condition he had, and tell me about the surgery and what happened.
Well, Apollo was diagnosed. We took him to we initially found out something was wrong with him because he had a slight cough. And at first we thought it was just, you know, your basic kennel cough. You know, it was something that he could easily overcome, you know, and it wasn't going to be life-threatening. And we took him to the vet, and they're like, we hear a heart murmur. And we're like, what? I mean, he's only six, just barely 6 years old. And so we, of course, took him to another vet, get a second opinion. They're like, yes, he has a heart murmur. So we had to take him to the emergency vet, not too far away. And they began to tell us that, yes, he has a heart murmur and that he is given about 3 months to live. And it was completely devastating to me. I've honestly never taken anything so hard in my life. I cried like a little schoolgirl, I'm not gonna lie to you. Because Apollo was everything to me. Like I said, he gave me reasons to get outside and still do things, and gave me another purpose in life. And for him to, his life to be cut short at 6 years was almost unbearable for me. And this is coming from me. I mean, I've dealt with, you know, losing friends and being in combat and getting injured myself, and none of that even compared to losing Apollo in my eyes. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
I remember the day. I remember the day you called me and you told me he didn't make it out of surgery, and my heart just sank to the ground, because to me that dog was everything too. You know, he was a game changer for me, and I know obviously he was for you. So then here you are. You're back to square one where we met. You know, you're lost. You know, you wanted a dog to help, just to, you know, help walk with you through life. Obviously, assist you in tasks you need. Did you all of a sudden feel that same feeling that you had 6 years earlier?
Yes and no. I felt very similar, but at this point now, when I first got Apollo, I remember I had my mom there, but I was alone, essentially. It was a little different now because I have a wife and daughter. So I wasn't completely in the same place that I was, but I still felt very similar in a lot of ways. Yeah, without Apollo. So it was, like I said, it was very similar, but it wasn't exactly the same.
Yeah.
I still felt like there was a big piece of me missing without him.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Then you called me up and said you wanted another dog. And I said, great, you know, I'm the guy to talk to. And I said, I have a couple potentials right now that I'm working on. I'd love to get them in your hands. And then you tell me, no, I want a Dobie. And I said, Ty, I can't promise you I'll find a Dobie in the shelters. I said, I can try, but the chances might be slim to none, you know? And you said, I don't care. I want a Dobie. No, you said it's your spirit animal. I think because all those years you spent with Apollo, basically he made that much of an impression on you. Let's just say that. And so then you find somebody who's needs to rehome their Doberman. So talk me through that process. I remember you searched high and low. I searched high and low too. I couldn't find any of the right Dobies. I probably tested about 15 Dobies out here in the California area. I had myself and my trainers driving all over the whole state of California, and they just weren't the right dogs. I'm telling you, I've done this enough now where I can say this dog is good. This dog is good. This one's not going to make it. It was all these dogs that were never going to be good dogs. They were never going to be good working dogs for you. So suddenly you find this new dog, this guy is trying to rehome, and his name is Echo. What did you think of Echo when you first met him?
When I first met him, he was a great dog. You know, I mean, he is a great dog. But when I first met him, I saw a lot of Apollo in Echo.
So you knew that like this had to happen. 'Cause I remember you called me and said, this is the one. I said, Ty, I'll be the judge of that. And you said, I don't care if he's a service dog or not. He's going to be my dog. Just please train him for service. And then.
Yep. And that's when you told me, I said, you can't guarantee that, you know? And
well, because the reality is when it comes to service dogs, there's, especially when it comes to shelter dogs or rescues, you know, it's not like, you know, most organizations that train service dogs, they breed them and they groom them from the time they're 8 weeks old. They wean them off the mother. And they're groomed their entire lives to be service dogs. So they can tell which ones are going to make it and which ones aren't, because they can see the problems, you know, over months and months and years, technically, of learning the dogs. When I'm getting a shelter dog, the only thing I know about the dog is what it looks like. So such was the case with Echo. You say, this is the dog. I say, well, I don't know that yet. So you get him out. When I meet him, I bring him out to California, and then I started testing him, and right away I could see he's a classic Dobie where he's very jumpy. He's jumpy and he's very like curious of things. You throw a stick in the woods to the right of him and he stops and he almost jumps like 4 feet back and like looks and he looks, what was that? What was it? What made Apollo so special was you could land a helicopter next to that dog and he wouldn't even flinch. That's why I saw something in Apollo that was special, and he was unlike any other Dobie I've ever worked with. Echo is your classic Dobie, jumpy, very, very alert, constantly alert. Like any little movement, boom, he looks. Apollo was not like that. That's what made him so special. And so the first thing I noticed was Echo had these personality traits, and that makes it very difficult right there, because when you're, as a trainer, I'm sitting here fighting instinct. It's difficult. Automatically, I'd be like, okay, well,
we're not off to a good start. It's not a deal breaker, but that means I have to teach this dog a lot more control than what I had to do, you know, any other dog, like especially like Apollo. So I remember the process. Training him was twice as difficult. We put in overtime in this dog, and then as the months went on, I started seeing Apollo come back to life. It's almost like Apollo, you know, his spirit just appeared in this dog, and it was an age thing too, because Echo was, you know, he was still young. He was about a year when I started working him, and he was about a year and probably like 7-8 months by the time I was done. And so there's a big transition of personality when it comes to that age difference, you know. So age is a huge thing when it comes to training. But I remember it was a lot easier on you with this dog, with Echo, when you got him. Because usually when I train a service dog for somebody, there's a long process. There's a 2-week process. You remember that process with Apollo. I spent weeks with you in not only in California, but also out in Walter Reed in Bethesda, Maryland. And we spent days and all day work together, all day, all night. It was just work, work, work. I remember when you grabbed Echo, and he was trained just like Apollo. It was literally a blueprint, just like Apollo was trained. And you grabbed that leash, and it was almost like you had Apollo again. There was no training on my part to be had to train you. There was nothing that I had to show you, because you literally took the wheel and you were like, I know this car. You built me the same car that I had, you know, for years. It just has a different name. So that was the most special part for me, because it was almost like, you know, to me, it was like reliving, you know, it was like a proud father, like reliving, you know, his history, reliving his past, watching his best friend, you know, go through a pinnacle moment in life. So how's your relationship now with you and Echo? I mean, I know that dog is, you know, he's special in his own different ways, but do you find yourself ever, you know, looking at him and, you know, accidentally seeing Apollo? Does that ever happen?
I mean, it definitely happens. There's been a couple cases where I actually have called him Apollo a couple times.
Me too. In fact, the entire time he was here, I'm telling you, my trainers weren't doing it because they never met Apollo, but I was calling him Apollo the entire time. And my trainers were all like, Brandon, Apollo's gone. And that, cause I have Apollo's pictures on my wall here. And man, I did it every day. Eventually I was like, we should just call the damn dog Apollo. Apollo too. But what's your relationship like with him now? I mean, you guys, is it just business as usual? You guys having fun? Has he once again, major improved on your life, made your life just that much better?
Oh yeah. I mean, Echo's great. He goes literally everywhere I go. You know, he sleeps, you know, at the foot of my bed, right? I mean, luckily I don't need much foot room anymore. You know, so he sleeps very comfortably, right at the bottom of my feet, so, or by my nubs. And we're inseparable, you know. Yeah. If he can't go somewhere, I don't go, you know. But with his daily, my daily activities, and, you know, when I do go out in public and walk around, or if I am in my chair, whatever the case is, it's just, he's just a life improvement, man. It's just, he puts a smile on my face everywhere I go. If it's not his goofiness that makes me smile, it's just looking at him and thinking of him and thinking of Apollo at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how does your daughter and your wife, get along with him? I know your wife, Lauren, she's very extremely protective of him.
Yeah. They,
she obviously doesn't want a repeat of what happened to Apollo.
No. I think my wife was my biggest advocate in a lot of ways for getting another Dobie. And she did a tremendous amount of research into getting him and to looking through his bloodlines and to make sure that his family didn't have that heart disease in their bloodline or weren't bred through it. So my wife, especially my wife, she was, like I said, my biggest advocate, and she went through everything she could to find me the right dog. And
I was with that process. I remember that's when I first really started, working with your wife. I've never talked to her before until that moment. And let me tell you something.
as someone who's known you for years now, you've had a lot of lucky moments in life. The fact that you survived getting blasted by an IED and lived, that you're lucky. You are lucky as hell. But I think what makes you even more lucky is the fact that not only you have a incredible daughter who is beyond her years, by the way.
Yeah.
she's like 9 years old, going on 40. But but your wife, I mean, anybody with a wife like that is a lucky man. Trust me. I've met a lot of people's wives out there, and you hit the jackpot with that one, buddy. So consider yourself lucky.
I thank God every day for her. So
yeah. So, well, so Tyler, before we go, I heard that you actually have your own foundation. Tell me about that.
I do. I help run a nonprofit called Hookin' Veterans, and what we do is we take other combat wounded veterans out for a weekend trip of deep sea fishing on big 70 plus foot yachts.
Nice.
And it's an all expenses paid trip, down to Jupiter, Florida, with two long days of fishing and camaraderie with other guys that share similar struggles. We have it on Facebook. You can look us up at Hookin' Veterans on Facebook.
How do you spell it?
HOOKIN space veterans. VETERANS.
HOOKIN.
Veterans. Yep. Hookin' Veterans.
Veterans. And you can find that on Facebook.
Yes.
All right, Tyler. Thanks for talking, buddy.
Not a problem, man. You take care.
All right, man. Okay, that does it for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe, share, rate, or review if you like this episode. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram at @AnimalBrandon, Facebook at @AnimalBrandon, and Twitter at @BrandonMcMillan. We are out of here. I will see you soon, folks. Till then, be good.